Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Y'all want your midnight snack or what? All right. Don't call it an encore, because it ain't. Thank y'all very much one last time for having us. Every time it gets better and better, Seattle. Thank you to any repeat offenders, first timers. Sing along with this one. It's real easy. It's one word. One last time, we're a power trip from Dallas, Texas. Thank you very much. This song is called The Crossbreaker.
The pain reliever, I'll rip the nails from your back.
fuck Seattle, we're out of here. Peace. Seattle, thank you. We're a power trip from Dallas, Texas. I hope we see you next time. You're the best, Washington. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 136 of Getting It Out podcast. That was Power Trip with Crossbreaker from their live record that came out this summer on Dark Operative. Unfortunately, you probably know the reason why I'm playing that song. If you don't, their singer Riley Gale, who was only 34 years old, unfortunately passed away this week. Rest in peace to Riley. If you go on, if you've got your pulse on heavy music, even in the slightest, you've heard of Power Trip. They quickly went from a crossover band playing hardcore shows to one of the biggest metal bands on the planet, and deservedly so. A couple of incredible records, I haven't heard a bad Power Trip track. But aside from that, everything I've ever heard about this guy, Riley Gale, has been overwhelmingly positive. He's younger than me, 34 years old. Very sad thing to see, especially with somebody who was shining so bright. But, they say that happens. But, rest in peace, Riley. Never knew the guy myself, but a little bit of a Getting It Out podcast tribute to Riley Gale to open up this episode. Okay, moving on. In this episode, I have Luca from Necrot. We're talking about their new record, Mortal. It comes out today on Tent Crimes Records. We're going to get all into that and all sorts of stuff. The conversation went in a way that I wasn't quite expecting, and it was quite pleasant. Lately, it's been pleasant conversations with fellows from death metal bands, which is great. That's awesome. So another good episode here for you. Let's get into it. Okay, so here we are back again, another episode of the podcast. Can you believe it? The 136th episode in a row. He made it back again. He's still broadcasting. Well, he's back to broadcasting. He is me, by the way. He's back to broadcasting from his basement, where he has for the last year or so, except for the last 3 months, because he's finally wrapping up his home renovation that they just decided to extend. That's none of your business, though, even though I share it with you every week. I don't know. Is that like a form of bragging? I guess it kind of is. I keep not posting anything about it on social media because I feel like that's the way people brag about home renovations, or things are going well for them, so they show you all this progress they did. I don't know if that's true or not. It's just something I feel. So I'm trying not to do it. So I guess I just come on here once a week and be like, listen to all this progress we've made. By we, I mean our contractor. I barely do anything. I paint a piece of trim here and there. My wife does more work than I do. Everybody does more work than I do. The kids endure it better than I do. At least we get a box spring to sleep on. They sleep straight on the ground, the dirt, actually, on top of rocks. That's what we've done to them, in a bed of snakes. And they're okay with it. They do better than I do. I need plush pillows. I need beanbag chairs everywhere. It's just the way I live. I don't know. I feel like I'm talking. All right. It sounds like I live in a hookah lounge. That's not quite it. All right. In fact, there's no smoke here. Smoking. How about that? Smoking's still a thing. And if you still smoke cigarettes, that's okay. You can do that. It just stinks a little bit. And I don't blame you for doing it. Go ahead. Go ahead. I did it for many years, like 16 years. So I understand. I just noticed lately, now that I'm about 2 years into quitting, people who smoke cigarettes tend to have a smell. And that's okay. You know, everybody's got a smell. I'm sure I got a smell now. I'm sure people think, you know, even if I don't have a smell, that I'm full of shit, because mostly I am. But that's okay. Anyway, I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about here so far on this episode. And that's all right, because, you know, I'm as unprofessional as it gets. 136 episodes without figuring it out on getting it out. That's how you summarize what I'm doing here. And that's okay. I keep saying that's okay. Maybe I'm just trying to reassure myself. You know, the other morning, we woke up to our two idiot cats killing a little tiny mouse. And, well, we thought they were killing it. Instead, they kept it alive for several hours and just pummeled it repeatedly. And it just kept squeaking and squeaking. And full disclosure, terrified of everything. So eventually, I put it in a dustpan and got it out of the house. But first, I just tried to avoid it. That's not totally true, but you know, it was in a corner, and I had to move a box, and you know, who wants to move a box, right? So I had to wait until it was near the bed, and then we don't want those diseases. Cats can have them, we can't have them, but now the cats probably have worms, and now we probably have worms because I pet those cats, because suddenly I'm friends with these cats, right? It took a little over a year, but now me and these cats are friends, cat and human friends. And every now and then I'll pick up this one cat and I'll sit it on my lap, and it digs its claws into me and I push it away. There's some head scratching in between there, but eventually the nails go into my leg and I say sayonara, except I say it in English. I say goodbye, and then the cat goes away. And later it comes back and it meows at me, and I pick it up, but it makes this noise like it doesn't want to be picked up. But then I put it on my lap and it purrs immediately. What's with this, huh? Cats are confusing. And you know what else is confusing? Cops shooting black people still. What the fuck is up with that? I realize it's not a new problem, but it's a pretty persistent problem, and it's getting, frankly, quite disgusting. I don't know if something's ever going to be done about it. I don't know what to say about it anymore. I don't know if I have the place. I don't know. The whole thing confuses me. I don't know. I don't know what to say. But I'm glad. I don't know. I don't know what I'm glad for. I'm glad that there are leagues, sports leagues, that have a high visibility, like the NBA, trying to do the right thing. At least the players, the athletes, the one who have power and have eyes on them and are idolized by young people, are at least making some kind of effort. I don't think you see that in other sports. Obviously you saw that with Kaepernick and the NFL and all the guys who kneeled for years, so I'm wrong there. But other sports like, I don't know, baseball, hockey, whatever, and sports aren't everything. I don't know where this rant's supposed to go, because I don't know how to say the correct things. And I could edit this out and just not sound like an idiot on the podcast when I try to speak about this stuff. But I think a lot of you can relate. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. I don't know. I'm totally confused by the whole thing. Not confused. I don't know. You get what I mean. And that's the problem, right? That's one of the big problems, is that we don't know what to do, even though it seems like there's a really simple solution, and it's just impossible. Like, it's the most impossible simple solution, and I don't know. But hopefully that can start to change in November, right? Wink, wink. We can do something there. Anyway, did I mention the Philadelphia 76ers suck dick? Okay, so let's move on. Let's get to this interview with Luca. First, I want to play you a song from their record, Mortals. The song is the lead-off track, and it's called Your Hell. And you're going to like it, okay? And then you're going to listen to our conversation, and you're going to like that too. And then at the end of that, I'm going to play a song called Stench of Decay, which is also off his record, and you're going to love that. And then at the end, I'm going to say some more things, and you're going to tolerate that. And at the end, there's going to be another song who I haven't determined yet, and you might like that one too. This is a lot to like, love, and be indifferent about, coming up on Getting It Out Podcast.
Let me know when we start.
Oh, well, let's start right now. Let's just do it. So, well, I guess you don't really need to introduce yourself because I'm going to do that for you. But you're Luca and you play Necrot. Or I feel like I say that weird.
Necrot.
All right.
That's
I get it.
That's
right.
How you say it. Yeah.
So I first saw you guys or came across you guys a few years ago when that demo compilation came out with The Labyrinth. Is that what it was called?
Yes.
Yeah, and that was like, you know, because I like seeing – I keep my eye on Tank Crimes because they, you know, typically have a pretty cool roster. And you guys really impressed from the beginning. But then when Blood Offerings came out, it seemed like, oh, shit, this is going to be a big new band. And now that I'm here, Immortal, you totally lived up to it.
Thank you. Awesome. Yeah, that was the plan.
I was going to say, it seems like that was the plan. And it seems like it's happening quickly. But now that now we got this this coronavirus shit. Is this messing you up at all?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We already got between May and September. We were supposed to play over 90 shows, and they all got canceled. So yeah, it is affecting us, of course. Like, it's affecting everybody, and especially artists, though. Like, you know, especially people that like us that we live off of congregating a certain amount of people in the same room. That's going to be a little complicated for a while.
And who knows? There's no end in sight, of course.
There's no end in sight. Yeah, that's why it's important not to lose your mind. You know what I mean? And also, it's important not just to sit around waiting for things to go back to normal. Luckily, we're very adaptable people, and you know, we're just doing what was best right now, just to keep our mental sanity and, like, you know, our economical situation squared, or, like, you know, as you know, we're just trying to save, not spend money and not lose our mind, pretty much. That's what we're doing. But, like, we're very happy that, like, you know, this coronavirus happened in a shitty moment, but it could have been shittier, because it could have happened halfway through recording, or it could have happened while we were already on the road with a bunch of merch, you know, already printed for that tour with the tour dates. Like, you know, it could have happened in a worst moment. Luckily, it happened like a month after we finished recording the album. Yeah, so like, we were able to finish the album. Like, you know what I mean? At least we have something right now that we can use to stay relevant, because at least we can talk about the album.
Yeah, that's
while
very
we wait.
That's very true. And I do several of these a week, kind of. And the amount of people that did get, you know, tours derailed mid tour, and you know, that did lose their ass is pretty amazing.
Like, it's like, you know, a band like us, for example, is like, you know, makes a living out of touring, but it's like, if a tour gets into, there is like an investment that always goes into tour. Like, you know, the day that we leave for tour, we are down $20,000, you know, immediately, just from making merch, just from renting the van, just from, you know, having to pay our sound engineer what we promised because he gave up other work, or, you know, like, you start with, like, you're in a big hole every time you start a tour. That's why we always do very long tours, because it's like, you know, you spend half of the tour or more just recovering your expenses, and then after, you know, the day 20 or something, then you start making money. That's why then you're like, okay, let's get to day 50, you know, instead of like, you have to. Otherwise, it's impossible these days for a band to live off its music. You know, like, nobody really sells that many records anymore, because everybody's already paying like a $10 subscription to Spotify to listen to everything they want for free.
Yeah.
You know, there is not a real need of supporting the band directly unless you want to. Unless you want to own a physical copy, unless you want to support the scene actively instead of giving it for granted. You know what I mean? Because it's true, it's like, when you take away the support to medium and small bands are going to disappear. And not only that, it's like, new bands are most likely not even going to start. Or, you know, it's like, we all lose at the end of this. And, like, you know, it's good for people right now to have a little bit more consciousness of where they spend that little money they got left. And not give it to, like, corporations, but give it to, like, support your local businesses. the local musicians or artists or any small business of people, like, you know, that put like 10, 15, 20 years of their life starting their or running their little shop, and now they're losing everything and you're going to Walmart, and that's wrong.
Yeah, that's true. And I've found myself even on a much smaller scale, just realizing that I can do little things differently. I put out an episode today with this band Spirit World out of Las Vegas, you know, this death metal hardcore band, and they're friends of mine, and I listen to them a lot, and I realize that only just because their shit's they don't have any physical releases, right? So it's just streaming. So I've just been listening to them on Spotify. Like, dumbass, you could just go. I was like, hey, stupid, go to Bandcamp and buy the fucking songs. So, you know, like,
if you can, you know what I mean? Sure, if you're broke and you have to take care of your kids or other stuff, and just go download it illegally from the internet. I don't give a shit. You know what I mean? I think music should be accessible to anybody, even if you're broke. But, like, you know, if you're spending, you know, $10, $20 a day just eating burritos outside, it's like one day you can make some food at home and support a band.
Sure. that's absolutely right. But yeah, it depends how much you like burritos, I guess.
I guess. If you can take a break for a day without consequences.
That's funny. So this record, it comes out in like a month, right? The end of August. Yeah. So but I've been listening to it for a little while now. And early reviews are out there, and everything's good, and I think it's awesome, and you're getting great press. Was there pressure to create such a good record after how you did on Blood Offerings, or was this?
Well, it was like I said this in other interviews. It was the perfect amount of pressure mixed together with the perfect amount of confidence, because it's like when Blood Offerings came out in 2017. Between then and going into the studio to record Mortal, we have played, I don't know exactly, but something between 300 and 400 shows. And we have played like with underground bands, but we have also played with like big bands like Cannibal Corpse, Morbid Angel, Immolation, or Exhumed, and Manicious, Suffocation, Black Dahlia Murder. I can tell you many, but like we were playing like big shows.
Yeah.
And like, so it's like we got more every night, and we got way more confident as far as like, you know, our shit is good. We know what we're doing. And then we got way tighter by playing together every night for so long. And also, it's like we got to watch, you know, we got to see where the bar is at exactly. Because it's like when you see playing every night for a month, Morbid Angel or Cannibal Corpse or Immolation or bands like that, you're like, okay, that's the bar. You know, now you know what top is like. That's the top. That's what you want to, you know, that's what you want to be. That's how you want to play, because it's like, you know, it's easy to go playing, you know, play local shows, or it's easy to go playing shows with bands that they're like less heavy than you. So every night you're like easily the heaviest band of the night, and you're having a great time. You know what I mean? It's more challenging. Where like, you know, right after you is Morbid Angel taking the stage, you know. So you're like, you know, you gotta fucking kill it every night. So it's like, it makes you way more, after you do all of that 300-400 times, you get back and you're like, okay, you know, we have to write this new album. But like, for us, there was never, or even for me, there was never a doubt that this album was going to be better than Blood Offerings. Because it's like, we are 400 shows later. And not only that, we had the chance of like, now we have the chance of make it better, like, we have the chance of like the things that we didn't like that much about Blood Offerings, we have the chance to fix it. Well, things that we really liked on Blood Offerings that we want more, we have the chance to put more, you know. And like the pressure, of course, is there, because it's like when Blood Offerings came out after the collection of our demos. So people were like excited about it, because we have already been out for like 6 years when Blood Offerings came out. And we have already been touring and trading tapes and did all the underground stuff nonstop. And like, so like there was already some attention towards us from the underground. But of course, we had to top demos with a real album. So that was easy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then you have to top an album that everybody loved, and it can seem more complicated. But there is that pressure that you need anyway. You need pressure to do good things. Everybody does. Like, you know, if you cannot handle pressure, you're not going to be able to do anything great. There is no fucking way. So it's like you need the pressure, but you also need the confidence that you're going to be able to do it. So it's like the mix of these two things, I think that's what creates something great. And not just only in music, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. And do you know the moment where, or was there a moment where you felt like you belong with those big bands of death metal, where your confidence, like, you know, kicked in?
Well, I think that there was a moment that because we have always been a very arrogant band.
Yeah,
I have to admit it. Yes, yeah. Since the beginning, we've always been very arrogant. We've always been like, okay, we're gonna become this one of the sickest. Always since the day one, we're gonna put the work. We're gonna practice every day. You know what I mean? And we're gonna be as sick as any other band. And so initially, that was always like, you know, our goal. We're like, we're gonna be the sickest fucking band. And it's like, one thing is that when you have that attitude and you're nobody, you know what I mean, at the beginning, nobody even know who you are, is a great attitude to have, you know what I mean, because it pushes you to do great.
Sure.
Then when you're starting to get affirmed, you have to tone it down a little bit, or otherwise you're just some cocky asshole, you know?
Yeah.
When things start going good. But it's like, we always had that arrogance, kind, you know, if that's the right word of not, to feel that we belonged everywhere. You know, every time we had to play on a bigger, you know, bigger stage or whatever, we would always go on the stage with that punk attitude of being like, we're gonna crash it.
What do you think?
We never got on a stage with our legs shaking. You know what I mean?
Right,
we always get on stage that we're ready to murder you.
What do you think that like, you know, these punk rock roots, or you know, the whatever that ethos, maybe just of punk in general, is kind of what helped set you guys apart? Maybe not a sound, but more of a attitude.
Well, I think that like what helped us a lot is the experience of coming from that background. You know what I mean? From coming from the background of places where there is like squats and shows that they're organized, where we're like the extreme music, or you know, the aggressive music, which is crust, punk, grind, death metal, thrash metal, they're all kind of like together. Like, you know, in the place where the Bay Area is, like, there is not much separation. You'll see the same people at the punk shows and at the death metal shows. So it's like, you know, we come from a background of a place that is very welcoming to all kinds of music, but it's like it follows a lot like the punk addicts at shows. You know what I mean? There is like respect. There is like a way of doing things. It's like, you know, we are not a band that was like, oh, that we put out our first 7-inch immediately on a big label that put us on some packages, tours with other big bands opening for them. Like, you know, we started by like, you know, we started doing things by ourselves, recording our tapes, cutting the covers at home, making photocopies, putting the tapes together, writing to other bands and trade them and sending them out and see what the other death metal bands in the underground were, and like organize tours with them, and you know, share a van, share a backline. Like, you know, we did a whole work of DIY everything until like, you know, 10 Crimes contacted us and like they asked us to put out the Labyrinth, the collection of our demos. But like, even the reason why we work with 10 Crimes is because we still have tons of freedom. And like, you know, we like to do things ourselves as much as possible. That's why we still pay for our own recording. We still own all of our music. We pay for the artists to make the covers. And then we have a very great deal with 10 Crimes that is almost like a collaboration where everybody's happy.
Yeah.
So it's like, for us coming from this background is like, you know, it saved us a lot from the fake dreams of becoming a big band out of nowhere, because this big label picks you up and makes you a big band. You know what I mean? This is a terrible misconception that lots of bands have, that they think like that they don't need to put in the work. You know what I mean? You have to put the work. That is not just writing songs and record them. You have to put the work of running your band, of contacting the other bands, of organizing your tours and getting shows and produce your own music in formats that they're like, you know, that you can afford, because making tapes is not that expensive. So it's like this whole thing is like, for us, is like the way we run the band is the way we have always run it, and like it works, because it's like you're never waiting for someone else to do the work for you. You're never working with people that you don't trust because they promise you that this is gonna happen. You know what I mean?
Sure, it's, so it's like, quite simply the DIY aspect, you know. The
absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we're a zero bullshit band. Like, you know, you can come to us and be like, you know, the head chef of like a multi-million dollar whatever and offering us something, and you're probably going to get the middle finger from us. You know, we're very much zero bullshit. We do things with people we trust and like, you know, and in a way that we can respect ourselves for doing things in a certain way. Like, you know, that's why Necrod is a band that's going to last.
Are you going to be able to keep, and I'm sure you say yes, and I believe you, but are you going to be able to keep not ethics, but the way it's operated? Are you going to be able to handle all that and grow the band? Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think you can. I think the times are different. Like, you know, record labels don't decide what's good anymore. They don't. You know, before it was certain record labels that people were looking at. There was way less bands too. So it's like, you know, E-Rage would put out something, you know, it was going to be good. Or, I don't know, Century Media or whatever. And it's like, now it's not like that anymore. It's like, now you can promote yourself on the internet. Now most of the records are sold online and not in record shops. So it's like even record distribution is not as important anymore. Or like big record labels, they're hit or miss. They put one good band out and then they put 15 bands that they're like unlistenable. You know what I mean? So they lost the respect that they used to have. Like, you know, and lots of the bands that end up, lots of the smaller band on bigger labels, they end up quitting after a few years. Right. You know, and like, so it's like they don't determine anymore what's cool and what's not. And it's like, ultimately, it's like, who's gonna get the good tours is the band that brings the people to the venue. So it's like, as long as we play a sick set, we don't need nobody behind us to get the good shows, you know, because people are gonna want to come out and see us. And like, think about like, you know, in 2016, before Blood Offerings came out, we already had a good following just out of playing underground tours and trading tapes with other bands. And like, you know, we built that whole momentum through those 5 years by ourselves without nobody helping us. We didn't pay no PR. We didn't, like, you know, just us.
Yeah.
And anybody can do it if you really want to do it and your music is good.
Right.
And then you can collaborate with someone who's going to help you in a positive way. But it's like, you know, you have to steer away from like this, the music business in a sense of like, oh, you need to go through the certain channels to make it, you know, also because it's death metal. We're not like a hip hop band that then you're like, oh, okay, now there is this $120 million. You know what I mean? And then you're going to handle it. It's like, you know, it's never going to get as big as other kinds of music. You know, even if you get as big as Immolation, it's like, you know, they still go on tour with a van and a trailer and they sell their own merch at the merch table. You know what I mean? It's like you can run things the way we have been running and probably forever without being a problem.
That's true. I mean, I don't know the inner workings of the bigger death metal bands, but I don't know how many of them just get to do death metal.
Well, no, lots of them do by touring all the time, which is not like, you know, oh, I sit at home and write songs. It's like, oh, you're on the road 150, 200 days a year or 120, and you're like, okay. You know, it affects your whole life. That's why it's like you need to really want to do this, because it's like, you know, to be on the road that much means that you don't have shit back at home.
Sure.
Because you cannot maintain anything when you're gone all the time. So it's like, you know, you're renting a room in a house with a lot of other people. You're subletting your room to someone else when you're gone. When you go back home, you don't own a car. You don't own, you know, you make some life choices that you're like, you know, your life at home is not going to be that comfortable because you know that you're living all the time. Or also it's like, you know, you're most likely not going to have that successful of a relationship with a woman.
Right. And are like, those, you know, all things that you guys are comfortable going for?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I really don't give a shit about these things. And I like my life how it is. And it's like I've been struggling to do this life since forever. And like, we were already doing it when we were breaking even and coming back from tour and you're super tired and the morning after you have to go back to work. You know?
Yeah.
to your real job. So it's like now that like we don't, you know, we can just play so many shows and make enough money to get by, because it's like, you don't make the money today that is going to change your life, but it's like, you know, you make the money that allows you to just play music. And to me, it's like, wow, this is the dream of a lifetime. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean,
and the sacrifice that comes with it of like, you know, to me, it's like you're sacrificing comfort, because touring is uncomfortable, or eventually it's like, you know, not having, living with a lot of people in a house in Oakland, just having a room is not as comfortable as having your own apartment. You know what I mean? We're in our 30s. We're not like, you know, 17. Like our guitar player is 45. Right. So it's like, you know, it's sacrifices that I gladly do, because I think that like what really fucks people over in this world, not one of the things is comfort. People get too comfortable, and then they give up their freedom. They give up their passions just so they can have more comfort and where to see and get fat and get stupid. I was like, yeah, no, I think too much comfort is not a good thing.
Do you know when you came to that realization?
Well, when I was like probably like 14, 15, because it's like I grew up in Italy. When you're like, and growing up in Italy is like, yeah, it's not like growing up in the US where everybody's got these ambitions and big plans and you're like, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. In Italy, you know, you're like, okay, if you want to do something, you're going to have to leave.
Yeah.
And otherwise, you have to adapt to the Italian life where nobody really has much of a chance, where you're going to get a job, not because you're good at it, but because you know someone, where you're not going to be able to play music because you do have to work your whole week to pay even for like, you know, a small place.
Yeah.
And not only there is not as much job opportunities. So if you have a band and you're like, oh, we want to go play a show, we're going to leave for 4 days, like, you know, not a month, 4 days. Eventually the person you work for is like, no, you're not going anywhere. And you know that you would have a really hard time finding another job. So you can't just like quit and be like, oh, I'll find another job when I get back. That's something that you can do in the US. You know, I've lost jobs for going on tour and then get back and find another one. You know, you can do it in the US, you can do it in Italy. So it's like, you know, you grew up in Italy, you already know that, like, you know, you're going to have to leave if you want to have to do something. And also it's like, you have this, coming from a place where you cannot do much gives you that extra push, that extra drive. You know, when I got to the US, I was like, oh, wow, I can do something here, you know. And it's like, you know, as an immigrant, you feel like that extra, I'll do anything it takes. You know what I mean? Because it's like, also you have that sacrifice behind you that you're like, you know, I left my family, I'm like, you know, I'm very far away from home, to the point that like when here is night, in Europe is day, and like, you know, it's even hard to fucking phone call.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know how much you sacrifice that when you're like, you know, you don't have your certainty of the place where you grew up in, where you have your old friends, or like your place that you like to go to, or like, so it's like, you know how much you sacrifice for, you have so much drive, and it's like, you really become like, you know, a force, kind of.
Yeah, that's interesting, and I can relate a little bit there what you're talking about with my wife. Like I said, she's from Italy, and she mentions a lot of times that she doesn't have the old friends here. There's no, you know, she doesn't have a history here.
Right.
And herself is, like you're saying, just a force. I don't know anybody who works harder than her. She just goes.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. You gotta head down and go, and nothing's gonna stop you. Like, you know, but you also not gonna take any bullshit.
No, she does.
Because people are gonna try and, like, you know, make fun of you, or, you know, you're the person from another country that is playing sicker music than you, and but you have a weird accent, and it's like, what the fuck are you doing there? You know what I mean? So it's like, you have to be strong. You have to be very, like, you know, convinced of yourself that you're gonna fucking make it. But like, yeah, it is a great push. And it's like, for me, it's like, it's sad sometimes to see people from certain places in the US that they eventually have a somewhat privileged situation, and they cannot see it. You know what I mean? Because they had it since they were born.
Yeah.
So you don't know it. It's better to come into it. definitely.
Yeah, that's been with her and I, that's a lot of conversations, is things that...
That's cool.
Things that we
also
didn't know.
The first few years are really hard for that reason of, like, you know, not having anybody to talk to.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know, the first few years are really hard because it really takes time to make friends in the U.S., it takes time because there is a big issue of trust because of like there is a lot of bad things that happen in the US, and it's like it's a very not that they don't happen in the other world, in the rest of the world, you know what I mean? But yeah. It's like, you know, I've been in poorer countries or even like you know, the different realities where people don't have so much ambition and drive and possibility that they don't screw each other over so much. You know, because ultimately we are all screwed. So people become more helpful within each other and like, you know, more of a community. While in the US there is a lot of like, you know, I'm gonna make it and I don't care how many corpses I'm gonna leave behind me. You know. So it's like there is a little bit of an issue of trust. It's not as easy to make friends immediately as you come in from another country. While, like, you know, I've experienced even from US citizens that they went to Spain or Italy and they're like, they stay there for 2 months, and in 2 months they come back, they're like, oh, I made friends. And they're like, you know, I made such good friendships with people immediately, you know, and they're like, we still talk. Like, you know, it's very much, it's faster in Latin countries to make friendships really easily.
Is that because, are we just assholes over here? That's what I feel like.
No. It's not an asshole thing at all. It's like, and the U.S. is beautiful for like, you know, the people who have very passionate and very skilled at what they do. Like, I feel that just like, you know, it's a place where you have way more possibility, makes it so that people are more concentrated on their own career over other things. Mm-hmm. While in countries where there is less possibilities, where people are more used to live in smaller places altogether, you're used to help each other with the family because, you know, there is not really, in certain countries, there is not a chance for you to make it fully independently. You're going to always have to need some help from your family or from a friend, or you're always going to be called to help them too at one point. So our lives are more all connected and we all kind of depend on each other. In the US, nobody depends on nobody because everybody can go make money, get their own place, do whatever the fuck they want. You know what I mean? So people are more concentrated on making it on their personal life because they actually can. While in Italy or other countries, it's like, you know that you're not going to make it. So it's like, what do you start concentrating on? You start concentrating on your friendships. You start concentrating on your relationship with your partner. You start concentrating on, like, eventually what you eat, the food. Like, you know, you start concentrating on things that are simpler, more essential, more basics. So then it's like it creates a society that is a little less rough, you know, a little less cutthroat.
Yeah, that's that. I never would have thought about that, and that's really I love that though. That makes perfect sense. I totally understand. Thank cool. you for explaining that to me.
You're welcome.
Well, we got really off topic, but I want to talk to you a little bit about your record. Yeah, because
what record?
Yeah. Well, this one it comes out like we said August 28th. It's called Mortal. It's on Tank Crimes. You don't get to tour on this. Was there a delay? And did you push back the release?
Yeah, we did because it was supposed to come out at the beginning of June, and then we were like, oh fuck, we're not gonna be able to tour with it. So we were like, let's postpone it by a couple of months. Because initially we didn't know how much along this pandemic would last. Yeah. Eventually it was going to be just a month. We get back to our business. And like, you know, August, we put out the album in August and we go on tour with it. Then when we realized that, you know, when we realized that things were not going to go back to normal anytime soon or ever. So we were like, okay, August it is. We're not going to push it back anymore because there is no point. Well, we're going to push it back another year. It's like, that doesn't make sense. So then we decided to release it at the end of August, and I think it's the right decision. It's like, you know, we're excited about the album. We want people to listen to it.
Yeah, and you know, it looks like you might hit the next stimulus check right on time too. And people,
is that happening?
Yeah. I don't know when, but yeah, apparently there's another round of checks coming at the end of August, so you might get it perfectly.
For real? Yeah, they figure it out.
Well, I think so.
They're sending us.
I think it's another 1,200 a person.
Another 1,200. All right. Yeah. Keep on coming.
Yeah, it's not a bad deal, huh? No,
for sure. Free money is always a good deal.
Well, for this record, I noticed listening that you vocally sound stronger. Now, I don't want to say better because you sounded good before, but was that a just a practice Is that just practice, yeah, or were you really pushing?
A lot of practice, a lot of like playing all the shows, you know what I mean? You're doing it every night. Also, it's like you get used to do it for extensive amount of times. Like, you know, you go on tour for 45 days, you're doing it every night. And you just become more confident. Also, it's like I took, I used to smoke.
Yeah, so did I. It sucked.
Uh-huh. I used to smoke and I took almost a year break from smoking anything. I wasn't even smoking weed.
Yeah.
and then, that helped? Like, my vocals improved a lot. I think it was a mix of quitting smoking for the record and a mix of like just playing so many shows that you become so good at it. So good at it just from doing it.
Yeah, I did vocals in a band for about a year, and I never got good at it. It was awful. And
it takes way longer than that. I started singing in 2011.
Yeah.
And it sucked. Like, when you start, you have no idea what you're doing. Yeah. And you go home with a sore throat every day.
Yeah.
Every time you go home, like, you're with a sore throat. You're like, you're drinking tea and shit, and you're like, what the fuck? And then you keep doing it, you keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it, and then eventually you start figuring it out, and it's like, it's just practice. It's just muscle memory. It's like, I read an interesting article about this that it says that, like, you know, infants, little kids, you know how they scream?
They sound like
demons.
Yeah.
Sometimes you hear a kid screaming, you're like, oh shit, the gates of hell have opened.
Right.
And it's like, because the possibility of your vocal cords, of the sounds that you can make, are immense. There's so much. And it takes training, and it's like kids, they actually know how to use their vocal cords better than adults, and then we forget it, kind of. So it's like, it is training. You can train your vocals to sound insane.
Yeah, and some people have done a great job of that, and you're all well on track. When this comes out, being that, like I said, you can't tour, what are you looking forward to here with the release of this? Is it just people finally hearing it?
Yeah, I want people to hear it and be able to listen to it on their earphones or at home, whatever, in their car. You know, it's exciting. It's like, you know, when I like a band, and I like a lot of bands, when they put out a new album, and so I'm happy, you know what I mean? I'm stoked. I want to have it. I want to hold it in my hands and listen to it and look at the lyrics and look at the core. Like, you know, I think it's a good thing. Like, we need to give people this album right now because they really need it. Like, it's a good feeling to get an album of a band that you love. It's like, you know, at least it makes one day of your life exciting among all this craziness, you know? And it's like, we have this cool album that is super sick, and like, I want people to hear it, you know, not just for personal satisfaction, just because, like, I know people will enjoy it, and like, you know, eventually it'll help someone out. I mean, music have saved me so many times. It's like, when I was a teenager, I don't think if I would still be alive if it wasn't for Motorhead.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you listen to like the songs or these albums that make you like, you know, they help you. They help you go through with whatever you're going through with your life, you know, because it's like, it's not just music. It's like, it's comfort, not to listen to a band that you love. It gives you that kind of comfort of like,
yeah.
You know, things are going to be somewhat okay. Or if everything goes to shit, you can always get high and listen to a record that you like, you know.
That's true.
Like, to me, it's like one of the concepts of mortal is also this of like mortality, of like not getting so caught up with this life and the things that happens with you. You know what I mean? A knowledge that you're going to die, a knowledge that you're going to die even before you actually die. Because it's like, you know, we all lose things through our life, and we all change, and we all sometimes have the illusion that certain people are going to stick with us forever, or certain things are always going to work out. And like, you know, it's important to acknowledge your mortality and always be ready to lose everything. And don't get so attached to what you got. And it's like, you know, this coronavirus has put a lot of people in front of that, because a lot of us were losing what our certainties of our lives were. And it's like, it's really showing who is ready to die and who is not. Because it's like, if you're ready to die, you are not living, concentrating on the things that you lost. You know, you let go of the things that you lost and you move on to whatever you can do now. You know, and it's important to that, because it's like, we give for granted everything, but it's like, I am walking now, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to walk all my life. And if one day I'm going to lose the capacity of walking and I'm going to end up on a wheelchair, I can't spend my life thinking about when I used to have legs. You know, yeah. You need to learn to live your life without legs and enjoy the things that you can still do. So it's like, this is essential for being alive on this world, because it's a world that is very, is based on injustice and is ready to take everything away from you at any moment. So it's like mortality is important to acknowledge it, is important to embrace it, is important to embrace it as something positive instead of something negative. That's why a lot of people find comfort in heavy, fucked up, obscure music, is because they do find comfort in knowing that there is a final justice that comes down to everybody. Then no matter what happens, how horrible it is or how horrible someone has been to you, you know, we're all going towards the same fate. And it's like, I think that you can see this with fear, or you can see this as something good and comfortable. And I think that the people that feel the comfort in this obscurity are a lot of our fans.
Well, that's awesome. And that's very well put. And you know, I can relate to something recently where I literally almost died choking on a piece of chicken in West Virginia. And it was bad. I had to go to the hospital. And yeah. And
was it bone?
No, it was just chicken. It was just
a piece of chicken.
Yeah. But I was in the middle of nowhere in West Virginia, and we had to drive for an hour to find an emergency room, and I was choking the whole time.
Why? You were choking for an hour?
Yeah, it was like 4 hours, yeah.
Fucking hell. Where was it stuck?
I don't know. I don't know. I eventually was able to vomit it all up. But I was pretty convinced, as my wife was driving me to the
that
I was gonna die, and I was so annoyed that the way I was gonna die, choking on a chicken in the woods in West Virginia. But then, you know, like, but
you kind of accepted at one point.
But then it's just such a fucking bummer. Yeah, I don't know. It was just such a like.
I had a close to death experience too when I was 16. I took way too many drugs for 3 days in a row, and they were all different. So it was like,
yeah.
I had this crazy down where like I pretty much fell on the ground and I couldn't move anything. Any muscle of my body wouldn't respond to anything my brain wanted to tell. And I couldn't talk. I was sweating super cold and freezing, and then sweating super hot and cold, and couldn't say a single word. And like, I was 100% sure I was going to die.
Yeah, yeah.
And in that moment, you're like, you know, you have this panic, this insane panic. And then I remember thinking about like, you know, my sister, like, you know, crazy shit. I'm like, I'm not gonna be able to say bye to my sister, or like, you know, you go through this old paranoia, and then you get to a point that you're like, well, fuck it, kind of, you know. You kind of get to a point that you kind of accept it. Then I didn't die, thank God, or whatever, you know. I didn't fucking die that day. I would have been like, you know, a long time ago. It would have sucked. But these experiences like that they make you like, you know, realize that you're like, I mean, that was a poor choice from my side of taking all those drugs. But like, you know, it's true. You can eat a piece of chicken and you're gone.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
Like, right. So it's like, I don't know about like people that get mad about their future being erased or the plans that didn't go how they wanted it to go. I'm like, calm down. You know, we need to tone it down a little bit. It's like the what matters is there is no goal. There is no, like, you know, at the end of the journey that is life, there is no, the gates of like, oh, you finally made it, or like, oh, here's the trophy or whatever. It's like, it's just the journey. That's all we got. It's like, is the journey to dying at the end. And it's like, the way you live it is what's most important. It's not what you accomplished. What you accomplished almost doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah.
It's the way you live. Get it, trying to get there. Then if you get there or not, it's like you have to enjoy trying to get there, and it's like, and stop concentrating on like, oh, but I wanted to be married, oh, but I wanted to have kids, oh, but I wanted to be successful, oh, but I wanted to be with the same person all my life. And it's like, all these things are out of our control. Like, you know, you can do your best, that's all you can do, but then like things are gonna go away or another regardless of what you do. You know what I mean?
I don't think anybody was expecting, or at least I wasn't expecting, that kind of depth out of death metal. But I'm very impressed.
Well, but maybe you've been listening to like a lot of gore death metal. there has been philosophical, a lot of, there is a lot of philosophy intertwined with death metal.
Yeah.
And that's what I've always liked the most about death metal, is the more philosophical aspect to it, more than the, like, you know, horror, gory, fun, or whatever aspect to it. Yeah, totally.
Well, dude, I think you've been a great conversation, and this record, I want to really sincerely compliment on you. I know everybody out there is saying great things, but it's well deserved, and I think rightfully so. You should be excited for people to hear it, and it's going to go over great, as it already has with many people. I see on the cover of magazines. I assume when the time comes, there'll be awesome tours. I hope you guys get to do that relatively sooner rather than later, at least.
Thank you.
But Luca, thank you so much for having this conversation. I really appreciate it, and I genuinely enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Oh, if I can say one last thing,
absolutely.
Just, you know, I feel like I have to, because it's like, it's kind of a rough time for us as a band.
Yeah.
We do have a website, which is necro.bandcamp.com, where you can pre-order a record. We have tapes, LPs, CDs, and we also have like t-shirts and stuff. And like, you know, whoever can afford to support the band directly, it's a great time to do it, and we appreciate it. And regardless of that, I hope everybody, you know, takes care of themselves and try not to go mental during these times. That is really easy to do. So that's all.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I'll be sure. I'll head there myself right now. But
killer.
All right, thanks, Luca.
All right, take care, brother.
All right, bye.
Destroy, I love, be born to be.
So there you have it. That's my conversation with Luca. And I told you like that song at the end called Stench of Decay off of Mortal, out now on Tank Crimes Records. One of the best death metal records of the year. Undeniable. You can't argue with me. I mean, you can, but I don't really care what you have to say. And I got the microphone, right? That's how it works. I got the power. I got the juice. I got the juice now, right? That's a Tupac movie, huh? It's not a very good one, but people like it. That's fair. You can like it. I don't know. Tupac's a thing, right? Why do people always put up weird quotes and then attribute them to Tupac? That's a very funny thing that people do. It's the same way people like make a meme that says like, "I am my brother's keeper," and then put a picture of the Peaky Blinders on there. What's the significance here? I truly don't understand. But whatever. That has nothing to do with everything else that's happened on this episode of Getting It Out Podcast, which, by the way, thank you for listening so far. If you want to know more what's going on with Getting It Out, gettingitout.net and all things included, go to gettingitout.net every day until the website works. I talked to my guy this week, and he tells me September will be the month. Okay, so that's what we're going to go with. It'll be in September that you can finally go there and check out what's happening on gettingitout.net. If you want to follow the Instagram at getting_it_out_podcast is the Getting It Out Podcast Instagram. There is Getting It Out Podcast on Facebook, www.facebook.com/gettingitoutpodcast. There is the Twitter at gettingitoutpod. And that's about it. There's a phone number you can call. I don't know the last time that was ever used, but there is a phone number you can call and leave a voicemail, and I'll play it on the show. It never happens. So if you want to call that phone number and leave a voicemail, I'll play it because you're a special person. But that's going to be it for this one. I'm going to end you with a track from, what's their name? Psychosomatic. Psychosomatic. They're not a new band by any means. In fact, this record that they got coming out today is their seventh full-length record. But I do believe they've been around for much longer. It's cool, thrash, crossover, whatever you want to call it. You'll know the sound when you hear it, and I think you'll like it. This guy, Jeff Salgado, I believe is how you say his name, has been at it for a long time, and he does great things. This record's coming out. It's called The Invisible Prison. The song is called We Don't Trust You. It's by Psychosomatic. It'll be out on Nefarious Industries Records. Go find it. Listen to this track. I promise you'll like it. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.